Good morning. I was just telling council the clock in our conference room says straight up 10:30, and I realize that the clock here is a little bit slower than that. So we're according to that clock starting early, so we appreciate you returning. No problem. All right, council, you may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning. Texas law grants those who complete pretrial intervention programs the right to an immediate expunction. The real heart of this case is what it means to be an authorized pretrial intervention program within the meaning of 76.011 government code. Now, to understand what it really means, I'd like to talk about Chapter 76 as a whole in context, because it helps you see the structure of what the Community Supervision Corrections Department is set up to do vis-a-vis the court. So Chapter 76 of the government code is under court administration, which is under judicial branch. Chapter 76 just covers Community Supervision Corrections Department, otherwise known as probation. Probation works for the court. It's subordinate to the court. Each, and I'm sure that this is familiar to some of you that have practiced criminal law, but it didn't seem so obvious that probation was working for the court. So I just wanted to make that clear. And, you know, the court sets probation's budget. Even though probation doesn't work for the court, they're contractors for the court. So it's a bit of a tricky relationship because the court pays probation's salary. The court, you know, picks the director. The court tells probation what to do and what not to do. But they're still just contractors. They work for the department, not for the court. So it's sort of a hybrid entity. Anyhow, this is important because when the statute authorizes the department, probation, to operate these pretrial intervention programs, it's really the court that's directing the programs. It's the court that's creating these programs that they want to run for rehabilitation of defendants. So in criminal court number 5, where my client's case landed, that's the domestic violence court, and they have several domestic violence diversion programs, including the program my client completed, which is called the MIMO program. The MIMO program is pretty much like the regular domestic violence diversion program. It's 6 months instead of 2 years. It's less time. The reporting is less frequent. So my client had to report once a month. Participants in the big domestic violence program have to report once a week. But both programs are supervised by Community Supervision's Corrections Department. And that's because the court really doesn't have the resources to supervise all the defendants that it's looking after. They don't have the staff sitting there in the courtrooms. They have to outsource it to Community Supervision's Corrections Department. In this case, Court 5 subcontracted with a director of their diversion programs and then 2 case managers. My client had a case manager that worked at Community Supervision Corrections Department. Her name was Jennifer Staples. Jennifer Staples monitored my client's rehabilitative efforts, made sure that my client reported to the Batters Intervention Program, which is a rehabilitative program. She monitored all of my client's counseling logs. And she directed my client to do urinalysis randomly. So in return for these supervision services, my client paid Community Supervision's Corrections Department $60, which is $60 per month, which is authorized by statute. So in order to be a pretrial intervention program, you've got to be less than 2 years, charge no more than $60. You have to have court authorization to participate in the program. And the department can make you do reasonable conditions related to the rehabilitative purpose of the program, like drug testing, or no alcohol condition, or no victim contact condition. So those are the things that make it an authorized pretrial intervention program. And my client did all those things. So the program she completed, the Domestic Violence Diversion Memorandum of Agreement Program, bit of a mouthful, as well as all the other defendants that completed this standard program, they completed an authorized pretrial intervention program within the meaning of the statute. It's pretty simple, and there's not much more to the statute. The state wants to read all of these other requirements into the statute. At one point, they said it has to be a state-run or a state-funded program, which doesn't make much sense because all of the state-funded programs have their own statutory authorization, their own source of funding. Programs like the Veterans Court Program, programs like the Mental Health Program, the Family Court Program, all of these programs have eligibility requirements that are set by the state. For example, the Veterans Court Program, you have to have some sort of mental condition as a result of military service, and if you don't, you're not eligible to participate in the state-funded program. But these county-run programs that are authorized by 76.019 government code, they're different. They allow the county to have a lot of flexibility in establishing what these eligibility criteria are for any rehabilitative program the county wants to create. In this case, Court 5 created my client's program, the MIMO program, the Domestic Violence Diversion Program, a program for young offenders called YODA, and a program, and then an in-custody BIP, and a couple of other programs that the coordinator testified to. And in the Tarrant County Community Justice Plan, they lay out all of these special domestic violence county-run programs, and it specifically says that the county-run programs are created under 76.01. That's the authority to create these programs, and that they're immediately eligible for expunction, because the expunction statute says anyone who completes one of these programs is immediately eligible. So
that put in the record?
Excuse me?
Was that put in the record?
I had a citation to it in my reply brief.
Okay, but was it in the record? Because we can only consider what's in the record.
Well, I've looked at it as a secondary source, since this is publicly available information.
Okay.
So the court can decide how much weight to give it, if any at all. And the way that Tarrant County allows immediate expunctions for its pretrial diversion programs, I think that sometimes they may require a waiver, defendants to sign away their right to immediate expunction, and they're perfectly allowed to do that, according to an attorney general opinion, but it doesn't make it not an authorized pretrial intervention program. And just because Tarrant County didn't get a guilty plea entered and didn't get a waiver of immediate expunction doesn't mean that it's not an authorized program. This is just the MIMO program my client completed is court sanctioned, and it's an agreement between the prosecution and the defense to complete certain rehabilitative conditions, reporting, BIP, counseling, drug tests, and it got the approval of the court, Judge Cummings. It got the approval of the court coordinator, Deborah Besner, who oversaw the program, who gets in, who's allowed to be in, who's eligible. So the court would sign a defendant up for this program initially and then send them on over to the probation department, and the probation department would administer the day-to-day operations. So there's nothing inconsistent about the court being the overseer of pretrial diversion programs. In fact, it can't work any other way. community supervision's corrections department doesn't have any independent authority, independent of the court. So you have to have either the court authorized a defendant to go over and receive services, or you could have an informal agreement between the defendant and the prosecution that doesn't have court approval and that wouldn't be an authorized program, because the defendant wouldn't be receiving services from probation. So, for example, prosecution might say, okay, I'll dismiss your client's case if you pay off that bad check, or if you get vehicle liability insurance. Come back to me with the proof and I'll dismiss your case. Well, that type of program probably wouldn't count as an authorized program, because the defendant didn't receive any rehabilitative services from community supervision corrections. So I think that's the key distinction here. That's what the legislature was after when they said you can get an expunction. Rather than saying you can get an expunction if you do a pretrial intervention program, they made it more specific. They said it has to be an authorized program, because they wanted to make sure defendants were receiving these rehabilitative services that only community supervision corrections can provide. Are there any questions at this point?
I don't have any. Do you have any questions?
So I talked about a few programs that are expunction eligible, and I cited to them in my brief. Tarrant County has a whole lot of programs besides those four state-created programs. They've also got the deferred prosecution program that's set up under the authority of 76.011, and that's immediately expunction eligible. It says so right on the program materials that are publicly available. Other counties have these programs. Collin has a program where that's set up under 76011. And the problem is that when these defendants get signed up for these pretrial intervention programs, and they're promised an expunction at the end, they're relying on that promise. I know that my client, had it not been the understanding she would receive an expunction, she would have gone to trial. So to come back later and say, no, it's not what it appeared to be, it's not what it was promised to be, despite the fact that it qualifies under the statute as a pretrial intervention program, we're saying it's not, so it's not. I mean, as far as I can tell, that's the argument. I don't see any principal distinction between the MIMO program my client completed and the domestic violence diversion program, the big program that everyone admits is expunction eligible. So to create a rule that says that even though there's no principal distinction, that the county can just decide what counts and what doesn't count as an authorized program, I think would disrupt a lot of pretrial intervention deals that have already been put in place, and harm those defendants who have relied on expunction eligibility.
Ms. Biskin, you attached an Exhibit A.
Yes.
And an Exhibit B to your brief as an appendix.
Yes, Judge.
Are those the only two pieces of paper that constitute the diversion memorandum of agreement?
Yes, Judge. Yeah.
There's not anything else. It's not any further written documents containing any terms other than what's on Exhibits A and B in this program that you've been talking about in your argument today.
The testimony was that was the entire agreement between the parties, and this was not, this was a form document. So lots and lots of defendants completed this program exactly how you see it before you.
Well, I'm just talking about what was the, whenever we're referencing in your briefing, the diversion memorandum of agreement. It's only put these two things Exhibit A and Exhibit B.
Yes, Judge.
And that's what your client completed?
Yes, Judge.
And that's when you filed the motion for expunction?
Yes, Judge.
Pretty simple.
It is pretty simple, yeah. I mean, I don't think you need any more to make a decision than just what it says on the contract. Does the contract count as a pretrial intervention program under 76.01?
I'll take it your recommendation. If you had the opportunity to make a recommendation about the form, might say the version memorandum of this, add a paragraph that says this version of memorandum agreement is authorized by sections 76 point whatever it is of the PIN code.
That would sure make our job a lot easier, Judge.
You made that have you perhaps made that recommendation?
To Tarrant County? Next time I have a case here, I will, for sure.
Thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
Mr. Miskunis?
Court, counsel. I don't think anybody's going to find it shocking that I disagree with the appellant's position. The issue before this court is not whether this program fits under 76011. The issue before this court is whether the record supports the trial court's finding of fact, which is dispositive of the legal issue, that the department does not operate the memo program. This is a finding of fact, and it was made on the record.
But isn't that really a matter of law?
No, it's a matter of fact that leads to a conclusion of law.
So you're saying in every case, regardless of how many times the court has heard it, if the defendant doesn't meet certain procedural proof steps, the court can't find that a program that it runs every day satisfies 76011?
I'm sorry, could you clarify your question? That who runs every day? That
the court.
The department or
the
court?
The court. The court is dealing with this program. The domestic violence court is dealing with this program on a daily basis. And you're saying that the defendant has a burden to prove something to the court about the program, that it falls within 76011?
I'm saying if it's a question of fact, which this is, because the court made a finding of fact on the record.
But a finding of fact is also a conclusion of law, and a conclusion of law can be a finding of fact. The court's characterization of a finding of fact or conclusion of law isn't binding on this court.
Okay, duly noted. The reason I brought that up is because I wanted to clarify the state's position on the standard of review. State's position, which is different from its position in the brief. This was briefed by a different attorney who is not with the office any longer. I don't disagree with what he concluded, but I think he didn't take it to its ultimate conclusion, which there should have been a factual sufficiency review along with a legal sufficiency review. And in order to overturn a finding of fact made on the record, the evidence, the great weight of the evidence must overwhelmingly go against that finding. Appellant mentioned that she was required to make payments to the department. I don't think that this is dispositive. She was also required to make payments to a private vendor. No one's arguing that that private vendor runs the program. It just shows that the structure of the program has several different levels of subcontracting.
But isn't that the way all the programs are? I mean, don't defendants have to make payments directly to Interlock device companies?
I don't know, and that's not in the record. And my argument is limited to the record. That the department employees perform tasks under the program is not dispositive. We know that they are subcontractors, and we know that the court and the court administrator's office set the rules and the policies. And on this record, we don't really have an idea what the scope of the department's involvement is. We know that there are certain employees that perform certain tasks. We don't know the structure of the program. We know that there are four CSCD employees that work under this program, but we don't know how many non-CSCD program, or excuse me, workers there are under this program. That was never developed in testimony.
Well, are those developed in cases where it is a state-run program?
I can't answer that. I have no idea.
Well, you're trying to draw a distinction between this type of diversion program and a state-run program.
What I'm actually doing is saying that the appellant didn't meet her burden of proving that this was a CSCD operated program. And the paperwork references the department, or excuse me, some of the paperwork does reference the department, and that might be misleading, but what appellant's belief was is not relevant to this issue. Her subjective belief has no bearing on whether...
What do you mean the paperwork references the department and that might be misleading? It is what it is. It says what it says. How is that misleading?
Well, the memo agreement itself makes no reference to the department, and there was no representative of the department that signed off on the memo.
That's because it's the judge approving the memo agreement. No probation department representative signs off on any judgment putting somebody on probation. Correct?
Again, I'm limited
just
to the record.
Just correct.
I can't answer that. I don't know. It was not in the record. Evidence supporting the court's finding.
Counsel, do you have, when you said that the brief was written by someone who's not there, are you talking about Andy Porter?
Yes, sir.
And what you said was that you disagree with this brief and you're making a separate argument independent of what's in this brief.
That's actually not what I said, Your Honor. What I said was I agree with his conclusion about the legal sufficiency, but I don't think he took it far enough and that there should also be a factual sufficiency review.
Okay. Do you have dispute that the Exhibit A and the Exhibit B that's attached to the appellant's brief constitutes the paper, documentation of the diversion memorandum of agreement?
I do not.
There's other pieces of paper that's involved in this diversion of memorandum agreement?
I'm sorry. There are exhibits in the record that there were other receipts and paperwork generated by
receipts for payments of $60 a month?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, those might be evidence of compliance with what's on the conditions of bond. But that's mentioned in these documents, and the people that signed off on this included the defense attorney, the prosecutor, and the judge.
Yes, sir.
Who else needed to sign this diversion memorandum of agreement for it to be a pretrial diversion program that's consistent with 76.011?
I would argue that the director of the CSCD should be signing off, or at least a CSCD employee.
Do you have any case law to support that?
I do not. But it seems logical to me, if we're going to say that CSCD runs this program, that they should be part of the agreement. And there's plenty of evidence supporting the court's finding. One, the director of CSCD does not run this program. The head of the program is employed by the court administrator's office. She testified that as far as she knows, the pretrial diversion programs run by CSCD require a guilty plea, and there's no guilty plea in this case. And the most damaging piece of evidence to appellant's case was undisputed, and that was on page 67 when the court asked the director of the program point blank that, does the department, its director, or its employees have anything to do with the operation of this program? Her answer was an unequivocal no. The only way appellant could have possibly overcome this testimony was by putting the department's director on the stand to contradict the testimony, and she didn't do that. Are there any questions on what the petitioner was required to show up to this point?
So it's your position that in some cases this program could be proved to be authorized under 76011, and in some cases the defendant's not going to meet their burden to prove that the program is authorized under 76011. So it could be or it could not be. It's just all up to whatever the proof is at the particular time of the expunction motion and the hearing.
I know it appears that's what I'm arguing, but if the court will allow me, I'm going to show why this doesn't fit under 76011.
Well, your argument to this point has been that they just didn't prove it.
Well, and I agree. That is part of my argument. They didn't prove it. My alternative argument is that it doesn't fit under 76011, so she couldn't have proved it. Texas courts have a well-established, well-accepted presumption concerning statutory construction, and that is that the legislature deliberately and purposefully selects words and phrases it enacts, as well as deliberately and purposefully omitting words and phrases it does not enact. This statute, by referring exclusively to the department, authorizes only the department to run pretrial diversion programs. So to be authorized under this statute, it must be run exclusively by the department. But the evidence here showed that the program was headed by an employee of the court administrator's office and that the rules and policies are drafted by the court. At best, petitioner showed that this was a joint operation between the court, the administrator's office, and the department. However, the statute does not authorize the court to direct or supervise pretrial programs. It does not authorize pretrial programs operated jointly by the court and the department, and it does not authorize pretrial programs operated jointly by the administrator's office and the department.
Where are you getting that?
Where am I?
That, I mean, I'm reading 76011, and it says, the department may operate programs for the supervision and rehabilitation of persons in pretrial intervention programs. So if they're in it, set up by somebody else, the department can operate it. I mean, I'm not understanding
what
you're...
That's not what the statute says. The statute specifies the department to the exclusion of everybody else.
Where
are you getting that? That's what I'm asking you.
The text of the statute says the department.
Right. May operate programs for, and then one is, the supervision and rehabilitation of persons in pretrial intervention programs. So the people are already in pretrial intervention programs. The department can operate programs for it. How am I, I'm trying to understand where you're getting your position from the language of the statute.
Well, the statute makes no mention of the court or the court administrator's office. The legislature chose specifically to exclude them and to exclude every other entity but the department. By including the department, it necessarily excludes everybody else.
But the statute doesn't say that the people have to be put into the program by the department. It just says the department runs the programs for people who are in the pretrial intervention program.
And that, I guess, would go to the what the definition of runs or operates is and whether the trial court made a reasonable definition of operate. It seems in this case the trial court says operate means they run it, soup to nuts, the whole thing, which they don't. They don't make the rules, they don't make the policies, and the head of the program doesn't work for CSCD. How can you say that this is a CSCD-run program when the head of the department, the person responsible for running the department, is not a CSCD employee? And I know it's not my place to question the court. I'm simply using that as a rhetorical device. The head of the department, who testified undisputed testimony, gave undisputed testimony that the department has nothing to do with running this program. I don't see how you get past that. No one is challenging the credibility of the witness. And that
so
witness
it is,
gave
is
undisputed.
Is it the district attorney's position then that these pretrial diversion programs do not meet 76011? Any Tarrant County pretrial diversion program does not fall within the ambit of 76011?
That is not our position. Our position is that the memo agreement programs do not. There are several pretrial programs that do. The memo agreement does not. Excuse me, does not.
Counsel, I'm sorry, through.
Yes, sir.
Counsel, did you see 76.002 talking about establishment of departments?
No, sir.
Well, it says the district judge or district judges trying criminal cases in each judicial district and the statutory county court judges trying criminal cases in the county or county served by the judicial district shall establish a community supervision and corrections department and approve the department's budget and strategic plan. Doesn't that say to you that the district judge is the person in control of what you've been calling the department in your argument today?
Not necessarily. If there is a director of the department that handles the day-to-day operation and makes the rules for the department, then the department, although subordinate to the court, is its own entity.
Yeah, it's going to do, the court is supervising that apartment director and telling that department director how the program is going to be that that district judge is set up.
Well, again, I would point out, none of this is on the record. What is on the record is the head of the program saying unequivocally, this is not run by CSC.
Have you ever known a bureaucrat to be wrong?
Of course.
Okay. Thank you.
But you are assuming that this language says that the CSCD must run the program, and the language says the department may operate programs for persons in the program. It doesn't say the department must operate the pretrial intervention program. It just says the department may operate programs for people who are in the program. So you are interpreting that to mean that they have to run the program, and so this undisputed language is, you know, the nail in the coffin.
Well, the actual testimony was that they have nothing to do with the operation of the program. That is a quote from the record.
Okay, but the fact that they don't assign people to it, or what, they're still charged with the responsibility of supervising someone who is in the program, pursuant, particularly this case, the person who was in the program. A probation officer was assigned to that case, correct?
That is correct.
So they ran a program for people who were in the pretrial diversion program.
Well, and that's where the argument is. What does it mean to run the program?
Okay, well, okay. We're going the program. You keep referring to the program as if it has to be they run the pretrial intervention program. That's your position.
We're arguing about a specific program, so yes, the program.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank the court for its time. Thank you, counsel.
Well, it seems to me, as I was listening to the state's argument, that this really is a question of law. It's all about how you interpret the words run and operate in the context of this statute. So in terms of statutory interpretation, I think it's helpful to look at some of those other subsections within 76011 that have to do with interlock ignition devices and just general bail conditions, bail on appeal, bail on habeas, and regular bail. So it says that the department may operate programs for supervision of persons on bail. It doesn't say that the department must operate bail exclusive of the court. That makes no sense. Of course, the court sets the conditions of bail and delegates or contracts the day-to-day operations of supervising all the defendants on pretrial release, whether in on bail, just regular conditions, whether on intoxication conditions or on pretrial diversion agreement conditions.
Ms. Biskin.
Yes, sir.
You and counsel for the state are using the words the department, mm-hmm, as though that were one entity.
Yes.
But the statute authorizes the district judge to set up community supervision and corrections departments and approve the department's budget and strategic plan. But it doesn't say one department. I mean, it is the fact of what's occurred in your case, this case, is that the supervision didn't come from what was what counsel for the state and what you have talked about somewhat as being the department. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to focus on what the statute says. and authorizing the judge to have the power to establish for a community supervision and corrections department and approve the budget. Does that mean one? Does it have to be one department, or can it be the people that are working in the judge's office that were working with a officer to whom your client reported that particularly wasn't associated with this department that state's identified as the department?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about 76.002 government code, and it says the courts, it says either the district court or the county criminal court, which we have here is a statutory county criminal court, they set the strategic plan and in the department's budget. So Deborah Besner and all those other court admin people, they come up with a plan and they come up with a budget, and then they kick it on down the road to the department to just oversee the operations of it and the supervision. Before my time is up, I just wanted to address that record issue because I think it was a little bit unclear. The question was, is your contract with CSCD including their operation of this department? I mean, who ultimately operates it? She says Court 5. Okay, so for my clarification, does CSCD, do they have anything to do with operation or just no? And that's the definitive no he's talking about. But then she comes back and clarifies, oh, they're contracted to perform certain functions. And then she says, that's correct. And then the question is, at y'all's direction? Yes, at the court's direction. So at the court's direction, they supervise all the defendants on pretrial release and pretrial diversion programs. It's really clear in the statute. It seems like the state is requiring my burden of proof to bring in the court, you know, all the court personnel, all the probation personnel, just to prove my case that these people were actually doing what they're supposed to be doing as stated in this contract. And I don't know where that burden of proof comes from. It seems unreasonable. I think that if this court just approaches this as a simple question of law, this contract, none of the facts in it are disputed. So it just comes down to applying these facts to the law and the statute and interpreting some of the words in an admittedly a bit lacking statute. It could have a little more detail. But you know, it sketches out the general roles of all of the parties, and my client completed a program that meets this description and she's entitled to an expunction.
Thank you.
Ms. Bishkin, Mr. Makunis, thank you so much for your arguments here today. They've been very helpful to the court. This is a very interesting issue that you have raised for us to decide. We appreciate your good arguments, and your case is submitted. You are free to go about your business, and we will let counsel for the second argued case this afternoon move forward.